Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet 'em, greet 'em, treat 'em, and street 'em. Today's date is January 5th, 2013. Happy New Year to all the SGEM listeners out there. I hope you had a wonderful holiday spent with friends and family. Now, we finished off 2012 with a special guest host, Lauren Westifer. Lauren and I put together a top five list of FOAM sites, or free open access to medication. If you don't know about FOAM, I encourage you to find out more. It's a great idea and movement started last year. Now, this last episode of 2012 received a lot of positive feedback, especially about Lauren. So, do you think we should invite Lauren to be a regular on the SGEM to provide a student's perspective? Her genuine Southern accent is so much more charming than mine. Send me an email or tweet at the SGEM if you like this idea. This is SGEM number 18, and it's called Eye of the Tiger, hence the 1980s Rocky III soundtrack. The clinical scenario is an 18-year-old, fine, outstanding young man heading out for a quiet night of conversation and a few drinks with friends. He reports, quote, doing nothing, end of quote, when bam, someone jumps him and punches him in the eye. What a classic history of, quote, doing nothing. From an EBM or evidence-based medicine perspective, the likelihood ratio or hazard ratio of getting your ass kicked, quote, doing nothing, is 100, with a 95% confidence interval ranging from 99 to infinity. I'm a father with three children. After working close to 20 years in the emergency department, my advice to the kids is always be doing something. If you're standing around doing nothing, chances are very high that you're going to get your ass kicked. On examination, this young man, he has an isolated eye injury. His visual acuity is 20/20 in both eyes, or OU. His lids, lashes, and lacrimal apparatus is normal. Conjunctiva is normal. Bony structure is non-tender. His pupils are equal and reactive to light. Extraocular motions are normal. Cornea is normal. Fundi is normal. But his AC, or anterior chamber, has a dark, fluid-filled, opaque material that is gravity-dependent. Edemas were sports-related. This study must not have been done in Canada, because everyone up here plays hockey in the Great White North. And if you did do a study in Canada, you'd think the percentage would be much higher. It reminds me of an old Canadian joke about going to a fight and a hockey game broke out. I guess I should apologize for all this Canadian humor. I'll throw up a YouTube video, actually, on the blog to try to explain this to all of our American viewers. You kind of need a visual to check out that hockey move where you grab the shirt, pull it over the guy's head, and then start punching. Well, I think we better get back to the case of the traumatic hyphema. Traumatic hyphemas rarely result in permanent vision loss and resolve without any treatment. Antifibrinolytics have been tried either orally or topically applied to prevent vision loss. So the question for today's podcast, what should be done for traumatic hyphemas in the emergency department? The reference for this is a Cochrane database of systematic review published in 2011. The population they had was 19 randomized and 7 quasi-randomized studies. I don't know what quasi-randomized really means, do you? Does it mean they were doing them on Quasimodo? Anyways, they had over 2,500 patients with traumatic hyphemas. The intervention was both medical and non-medical, and then the control was a placebo, standard of care, or an observation. I think that's interesting. They're doing a study about eye injuries, and they're observing them. The outcome, well, the primary outcome was visual acuity time at resolution. So what was their best visual acuity at the time of the resolution of the traumatic hyphema? Now, their secondary outcomes were a risk of and time to rebleed, a risk of corneal blood staining, a risk of peripheral anterior synechiae, a risk of pathological increase in intraocular pressure, and a risk of optic atrophy development. So jumping right to the primary outcome, what was the results? No change. Yep, no change whatsoever in the primary outcome. And remember, that was the outcome of best visual acuity or final visual acuity following the hyphema. So in this study, nothing made a difference to the primary outcome. Everybody's visual acuity ended up the same, no matter what they had for a treatment. Now, the secondary outcomes, they did find that some of the antifibrinolytics reduced the risk of rebleeding, i.e. a secondary bleed, but the hyphema did take longer to resolve. But again, the visual acuity, and I think this is what would be most important to the patient. You know, what's my vision like at the end of all of this? The visual acuity at the end was not different. Now, I threw up a couple of forest plots for you on the secondary outcomes, and this was just to reinforce the whole idea of looking at forest plots. And as you'll see on the blog, you've got the studies listed on the left-hand side. You've got how many patients were involved in each study, and then they've got the odds ratio in this case with the 95% confidence interval. And visually, you can just take a look at it, and you can see they've got these little boxes and whiskers. And the boxes are the individual studies, and how big the box is describes how big the study was relative to the other ones. And the little whiskery things coming off the side are the confidence intervals, or the 95% confidence intervals. And if one of those whiskery lines, one of the whiskers, crosses the line 1, which is on the vertical axis, that's the line of unity. And if it crosses the line of unity, the conclusion from that study should have been that there is no difference. And then down at the bottom, you'll see a nice diamond-shaped. And that diamond-shaped symbol is supposed to represent all the studies combined. And that diamond, depending on how long those pointy lines are, whether they reach across and touch the number 1. And if it crosses 1, the conclusion is there's no difference. So when you look at this forest plot that I've put on the blog, you'll see that when they use aminocaproic acid versus placebo for the secondary outcome of hemorrhage, it favors the antifibrinolytics. The same is true when they used tranexamic acid versus control for secondary hemorrhage. So in both cases, they favored the antifibrinolytics. So the author's conclusion from this Cochrane review were, quote, traumatic hyphemas in the absence of other intraocular injuries uncommonly lead to permanent vision loss. Complications resulting from secondary hemorrhage could lead to permanent impairment of vision, especially in patients with sickle cell trait disease. We found no evidence to show an effect on visual acuity by any of the interventions evaluated in this review, although evidence is limited. It appears that patients with traumatic hyphemas who receive aminocaproic acid and tranexamic acid are less likely to experience secondary hemorrhaging. However, hyphema in a patient on aminocaproic acid do take longer to clear. So from the BEAM standpoint, the best evidence in emergency medicine standpoint, our commentary on this study was trauma to the eyes can lead to blood in the anterior chamber. Hello, that's what we're talking about here. The hyphema is typically a self-limiting condition, and it is rare to cause permanent vision loss. Now, they've tried many medical treatments to try to improve visual outcome and speed up resolution. And the most common topical or oral medications are the antifibrinolytics, despite them being controversial. Many of the modalities they have been tried with variable effects include steroids, cycloplegics, and ASA. They've also tried non-medical treatments, like patching the eye, bed rest, elevation of the head, and admission to hospital. This Cochrane review is typical of systematic reviews coming out of this unbelievable collaborative. They searched lots and lots and lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of papers, but found few to include, and the quality was limited. And no intervention made a positive impact, again, on the primary outcome. That was visual acuity. So nothing made a positive impact on the primary outcome. Despite this negative result, they were able to produce a 145-page review that said nothing impacts primary outcome and highlights that the secondary outcomes of less rebleeds took place on antifibrinolytics, but those medications were poorly tolerated. So the BEAM bottom line, well, most people with traumatic hyphemas do well, okay? So if you see one of these, you know that probably going to do well. Nothing seems to affect the visual acuity, and that was the primary outcome. And I think that would be most important to the patient. There may be benefit with antifibrinolytic agents to prevent rebleeds, but they do delay the resolution of that primary bleed, and these medications can have side effects. There's also no evidence for non-medical intervention, bed rest, patching, etc. The ED management then. What would the ED doctor do? What should we do? What should the SGEM listeners do in the management of traumatic hyphemas? I wouldn't prescribe anything. I just call ophthalmology. So the case scenario conclusion, how did this young man turn out? Well, this young man who was out for, remember, a quiet night of conversation and drinks and was, quote, doing nothing, was referred to ophthalmology. He did not keep his outpatient appointment. You know this because he re-presented to the emergency department 3 months later when you were on shift. You note that his hyphema is resolved and he has no visual complications. However, his chief complaint this time is a painful swollen fifth MCP, or fifth metacarpal phalange joint, of his right dominant hand, and you suspect a boxer's fracture. Well, the Keener contest from last week was Allison Clark from Washington University in St. Louis. She's a second-year ED resident and correctly identified that a funnel plots are used to check for bias in systematic reviews and meta-analyses. She had just learned this, actually, from the WashU ED Journal Club, which was my number one pick for the top FOMED site of 2012. Again, they do a fantastic job, and I encourage you to check out that website. So this week's Keener contest. Well, if you're listening to the end of this podcast, the Keener contest is, can you tell me what GMEP stands for? That's GMEP. What does that stand for? If you know, you're on the cutting edge of social media and emergency medicine. Email me your answer to the SGEM at Gmail. Use Keener contest in the subject line, and the first one to email me correctly will receive a cool skeptical prize. Now, it is 2013, and I'm going to keep bugging you about the time to take advantage of Ski Beam 2013, held February 4th to 6th at Silver Star, BC. We will be presenting all the latest, greatest EBM reviews. And listen, if you don't want to read those 145-page Cochrane reviews and you just want to know, hey, traumatic hyphema, can I just page ophthalmology? Yes, we have evidence for that. We will go through that and we will synthesize that and we will disseminate it to you. This can cut your knowledge translation window to less than 1 year. We're even planning on doing a live episode of the SGEM. We're going to do it as a pubcast at the conference. So make sure you sign up. Anyways, that's it for this week. But don't panic. All bleeding stops eventually. Remember to be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you heard it on the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Talk with you next week.